This is Piedmont Arts. I'm David Borax. Museums update, rotate, and reinvigorate their permanent galleries on a regular basis. Curators swap works in and out of storage, borrow from collectors and other galleries, and find fresh themes in new scholarship. Charlotte's Mint Museum Randolph recently completed a long-planned overhaul of its African art galleries. This week on Piedmont Arts, we talk with the team behind the update.
This is a very important collection to our audiences and to the city of Charlotte, and it's something that deserves more than a once every 10-year rotation.
That's Mint curator Jen Sudel-Edwards, who joins us this week along with guest curator Lisa Homan. Also in this episode, the latest installment of Fanfare. Phil Vavra has previews of things to do around the region, from Charlotte Shout to a celebration of LGBTQ songwriters and performers to the Loch Norman Highland Games. And I'll have news about more happenings at the Mint. That's all to come here on the Piedmont Arts Podcast from WDAV. It's easy to see there's something new going on at the Mint Museum Randolph in Charlotte. The second floor rear galleries are freshly painted in bright orange, green, and blue, showing off a wide variety of works from the Mint's modest African art collection. You'll see textiles, pottery, dolls and other figures, masks, and ceremonial garb. The installation not only puts these objects into new perspective, but focuses on their provenance, what we know and don't know about who made them and where they came from. Jen Sudel-Edwards is the Mint's chief curator and curator of contemporary art. Lisa Homan is an associate professor of art history at UNC Charlotte. I started by asking Edwards to talk about the evolution of the Mint's African collection.
The Mint received its first gift of African art in 1975. It was kind of a slowly building collection, and we really relied on gifts from donors over that period of time. We did not have somebody who was a specialist in the area. Honestly, really ever until 2014, when we had Dr. Charles Cole from UC Santa Barbara come in and curate a show. But from 1993 until 2003, we had a curator, Michael Whittington. At that time, the field in a lot of museums was oceanic, which covered basically anything that was an island on the water or had brown people that weren't really valued historically in Western institutions. And there were curators who were kind of responsible for all of those catch-all areas. So Michael Whittington, who was a specialist in Mesoamerican art, was also overseeing the African art that was in the collection. So he worked very strategically with trusted dealers in the field of African art, mostly out of New York City, and collected a few African pieces, but all of them he really wanted good provenance, a clear kind of path of authenticity or what he thought was really valuable for the museum's collection to represent this giant continent with so many different ways of approaching culture and art, and yet with no specialty in the museum that really understood the material. Michael was very careful about leaning on those outside scholars to compensate for that lack of information internally. So he built this collection very slowly. A few key works. He also had some gifts come in, but it was really limited to kind of one gallery. It would go into spaces at Mint Randolph, which was the only museum at the time that didn't have things on view. So it wasn't very intentional as to how we were showing this work, and it wasn't a regular rotation or emphasis on African art.
That was the situation until 2014, when the Mint began working with Michael Gallus. He was a retired professor at UNC Charlotte's College of Architecture and a collector of African art.
And he was on the Mint's board and took an interest in seeing this be a deeper representation in the galleries, because he recognized that there was a large African-American population in Charlotte and that they would probably have serious interest in seeing art from the continent. So he brought in Dr. Cole They did this reinstallation dedicated to galleries at Mint Randolph to that collection and had a symposium that was very well attended and very thoughtful and international in scope. And that resulted in a publication to emphasize the interest in promoting the scholarship of African art and not just the display of it. And so that was on view from 2015 until Dr. Homan did her installation. But Lisa and I initially started talking about this in 2019 when I was first hired as chief curator, because like Michael, this is not my area of specialty. So I wanted to bring in an expert who would be able to deal with the collection responsibly. COVID delayed it, but that was how we kind of got to where we are now.
What was the goal of renovating the African art galleries here? And why do this now, I guess, is the question.
We are doing it now because this is when the COVID delays allowed it to happen. It's not really tied to anything presently, except for that. I really agree with Michael Gallis's assessment, which is this is a very important collection to our audiences and to the city of Charlotte. And it's something that deserves more than a once every 10-year rotation. It's one that really should be turned over like our other galleries, which is, we'd like to say it's every year, but it's actually every 2 to 3 years just because of staff time. And this is the timeline that we're hoping to commit to going forward, that those galleries will be rethought and reinstalled about every 3 years.
Lisa, Jen just mentioned that you began talking together when she came on board at the Mint, but tell me about how you got involved in this project and what your interest is.
I think Jen and I started talking when she first got to Charlotte. And then when she moved over to the Mint, it became a more pressing conversation to discuss what maybe could be done, should be done to update the African galleries at the Mint. And as she's written about in the Mint's magazine, Inspired, she attended a couple of my classes just to sort of feel out, I think, how I was approaching the field, what my interests were, and how I would engage in a dialogue about African art. We would talk every once in a while, and she had mentioned very early on, gosh, I would love to reinvent these African galleries, right? But it wasn't until maybe late 2019 where we started to have a real discussion about it. And of course, COVID hit, but we had discussions about some of the other objects that were currently then on display. And I think that those conversations planted a seed for, again, how I would approach a new reinstall. So we had, she came to me and we had a more serious conversation in early 2022, and really started to work on it, I think maybe in the summer or so of 2022. And that's, so it's been about 2 years that we've been working on this.
Jen, was there money available to do this project?
No, we did not get outside funding to do this project. I will say I'm very grateful to the donors who lent works from their collection. So Asif Shakai, who is a recent transplant from Baltimore to Charlotte, lent his works. Michael Gallis, again, lent his works to the collection. Michael also underwrote a portion of the commission that is featured in the galleries, a masquerade costume by David Sanu from Burkina Faso that I hope Lisa will talk about more. Funding the last 5 years has been very tight for nonprofits. It's gotten exceedingly difficult in the last year. I see it only getting worse.
Lisa, how did you approach this project? How did you go about looking at what was there and deciding which direction to go in?
So my teaching and research center on addressing problems or overlooked questions in the field of African art history. That extends into my curatorial work. So I generally have been aiming to present African art in a manner that challenges assumptions, but also rewards visitors, ideally with an exciting new way to think about the work. In the case of this, the Mint's reinstalled African galleries, I focused on problems surrounding the provenance of the artworks, which is their history and their origins. How are they made? Who made them and why? How did they get here? This is in part because this is a current debate in the field. I'm sure you're aware of questions about provenance, questions about restitution, repatriation of African objects that are not on the continent. And these are very peculiar problems in African art history. We often do not have African provenance for works that we would assume are African art. So the provenance information for artworks, particularly in North American museum collections, tends to focus on ownership in Europe and North America, not African ownership or African creation. So detailed African provenance, again, the history and origins of an artwork, are the exception rather than the rule. And so how this relates to restitution or questions about repatriation is that there are most definitely works that have been ill-gotten, whether they were looted or stolen or coerced out of owners' hands, that are in European and North American collections today. It is not, however, everything. The reason I can say this is because, for at least in North America, it is really not uncommon to have no African provenance, meaning you just don't know who made it, when, where, why. So we can't say something like that is definitely ill-gotten. We can't even say where it comes from. So it is a very, very difficult situation for a lot of institutions, that it's not information they're often willing to share. And so I applaud the Mint for engaging in this project, for being transparent about its collection, and to let me do this. So I went through every single object file in the African collection. I went through the physical files. And so there, we're talking about, you know, a few hundred objects. And after I went through those files, I said, okay, we definitely have to deal with this. And I talked to Jen and I said, basically, can I highlight the fact that the Mint is not unusual, but that for many of these objects, we simply don't have provenance?
That was going to be one of my questions, is what did you find at the Mint? And it sounds like what you're saying is you found that it's like most other places.
Correct. Right. I found nothing unusual, which is, again, unfortunately, a lack of information. So a lot of the object files are just a couple of pieces of paper that are basically, we took in this object from this person, right? It was a donation. It's held in this room in the institution. And there might have been an appraisal done. So an appraisal is a curious thing. A true appraisal is like a binder. It is a massive set of documents where you look at an object, you assess what it probably is, and then you create, as the appraiser would create, what are called comparables. So like objects, in order to validate, right, what the appraiser is saying. So there might have been an appraisal done for many of the objects in the collection, but we don't have the full appraisal. So what we have is the appraiser saying, it is this thing, it's valued at this much, basically like a disclaimer, boilerplate that says, don't blame me, you know, if this goes sideways.
Can you give us an example of a piece that people will see in the newly renovated gallery that fits this description, something interesting?
There is an object in Dixon. So it is a gallery that is like a hot orange, like kind of a raw salmon color. It's kind of pretty. And so in there is a figure, probably from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And there is no information on that object. And it was taken into the museum at a fairly early date, I believe in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken. So it is identified as, in my mind, by style. So I used terms like, rather than saying a work is, which is common practice, if you don't know who made a work, you would just say, oh, it looks like a Yoruba thing, Yoruba being an ethnic group. And so we say it's a Yoruba thing. So we say it's a dance wand, it's a Yoruba dance wand, because it looks like a Yoruba dance wand, right? I find that intellectually dishonest. It's unverified, right? You don't know that it's a Yoruba thing because you don't know who made it. You don't know when, you don't know what, where or why or how, you don't know anything. So instead, I would just say unrecorded artist, not unknown, because somebody surely knows who that human was, and not an entire ethnic group because they didn't all make it. That's an absurd and just bizarre thing to say. To say Yoruba people made this is, I mean, at its foundation, it's just wildly inaccurate. And then the other thing is, I was also using terms like possibly or probably. So if it's, say, something that looks like a Yoruba dance wand, then I would say it's possibly from Nigeria or Benin, where Yoruba folks are most highly concentrated. If I had some indication that it it probably did come from there, then I would say probably instead of possibly. And if I know for sure that I would say it came from Nigeria or Benin.
I feel like you're taking us behind the scenes of the curator doing her job, and all of the questions that you're asking, and the answers or lack of answers.
Right. And you asked for an example where there's no information in the Mint's collection. I said, okay, there's this figure. It's in Dixon. It's a very small figure. However, right next to that in Dixon is a case that is, I think, really, really fascinating because it's an object that the Mint has had for over 25 years. So that is a hunter's tunic or a hunter's shirt that was acquired in 1999 from a dealer up in the Northeast. So they had a conservator look at the object to make sure that it was safe to put on display, right? To make sure that it was cleaned and taken care of in a way that, right, is a good custodianship on the part of the Mint. Remember, I looked at the physical object file. So I'm in file cabinets with file folders, right? When I opened up the file, an envelope spilled out, and on it was written, material from hunter shirt. And the conservator in 2002 had found pieces of paper with, they say, the hunter shirt. Now, the hunter shirt has a pocket, so I'm assuming they were in the pocket, but I don't know that. There were four, I think, four pieces of paper, and on those scraps of paper were written the names of people. And in some cases, it said mother and then a name, or father and then a name. I mean, for me, this was like detective work, and it was completely fascinating. And what I noticed, so again, my research is based in West Africa. And so I work in a country called Burkina Faso. It's a landlocked country that's just north of Ghana. And the scraps of paper that were in there, at least one of them was a kind of graph paper, and it's very, very common. It's like our binder paper here. It's what everybody uses for, you know, just daily life. And that the penmanship as well was indicative of penmanship of somebody who was educated in Francophone, French-speaking West Africa, which is like where I work. And then the names themselves are generally Mandé names. So it's like a language group that spans from Senegal all the way to Burkina Faso. This suggests that the hunter shirt is, in fact, from West Africa. Now, where is a bit of a question, right? And who it belonged to is a bit of a question. But we have all these names of actual people, I assume, right, on these pieces of paper. So in the Mint's install, we included all of that description I just gave you, and then replicas of those pieces of paper so that visitors could come and see what was with the shirt, again, probably in the pockets, and that they can also see what those names are. Now, I don't imagine that anybody's going to walk through and say, wow, I might know this person, right? But you never know.
Jen.
I just wanted to say that the hunter shirt is an example of one of the pieces Michael Whittington brought in after working with that dealer. And so that's a perfect example of something he brought in with good evidence that it was what it was. Provenance is something that is part of our everyday work and yet is probably the most challenging documentation of what we do.
So, what are some of the highlights of this show? What do you want to make sure people stop by and see?
Well, I'm going to be partial to my own research
Okay.
and to the idea of consent, having artists consent to have work shown, which Jen was just alluding to. So I commissioned an ensemble, a masquerade ensemble from an artist and a body maker in Burkina Faso, again, where I do work. And so the artist, David Sanu, I've been working with him since 2014, and I worked with his father previously since about 2008, but his father had passed away. So I commissioned a headpiece from him of a masquerade genre that is danced in Bobo-Dioulasso, Burkina Faso. So it's the southwestern part of the country. And he created the head, and then he chose the colors for the body, which would be like what we would think of as a costume. And I had a body maker create that the costume itself. And you know, there's all of these intricacies in this particular process, but what I want to emphasize is that the artist consented to doing the commission. He set his price, the Mint paid it, and he knows where his work is.
Jen, do you have anything that you'd like to highlight?
To be honest with you, my greatest pride in this installation is the transparency, is like working with Lisa and being very upfront with our visitors about the challenges of this area of collection and what museums are trying to do, to be honest about what it is and to try and do right by the cultures, by the artists. It's a very complicated and uncomfortable situation to be in, but to know that the way that we can kind of break down kind of resistance to being curious about other cultures or learning about other cultures or other people is through objects, through learning about their cultures, through objects in museums.
Jen Soodle Edwards and Lisa Homan, thank you so much for your thoughts today on the Mint Museum's newly reinstalled African art collection.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it.
Now it's time for Fanfare with WDAV's Phil Vavra. It's our new weekly segment taking a look at arts and cultural activities across the region. Phil?
Thanks, David. Let's see what's happening in the coming days. Charlotte Shout continues for another week with events and exhibits of art, music, food, ideas, and diversity in Uptown Charlotte through April 20th. Each year, the festival brings together internationally and locally acclaimed artists, dancers, musicians, poets, storytellers, photographers, chefs, and thought leaders with events taking place all over the city. Ticket prices vary and many events are free, so go to charlotteshout.com for all the details. The voices of Seventh Son, Vox Domine, and Spite and Malice are presenting The Stars Are Out, a celebration of LGBTQ+ songwriters, lyricists, and performers who've shaped modern American pop and Broadway music. The program features the works of Cole Porter, Tracy Chapman, Miley Cyrus, Janelle Monáe, and many others. That's April 11th and 12th at the Long Room on Central Avenue in Plaza Midwood. The 2025 Loch Norman Highland Games are set for April 12th and 13th at historic Rural Hill in Huntersville. This is the 31st year of the Scottish Festival, and it includes traditional music and dance performances, athletic competitions, Celtic vendors, historical reenactments, and even Scottish food trucks. Haggis, anyone? And the North Carolina Transportation Museum in Spencer is gearing up for some early Easter fun, including a train ride aboard the Easter Bunny Express with Peter Cottontail himself. Tickets include full access to the museum grounds and exhibit buildings, including the Bob Julian Roundhouse and Turntable, where you'll be transported back in time. Sorry, couldn't help myself. That's happening April 12th and 13th, as well as April 18th and 19th. For more about those and other upcoming performances, events, and festivals, be sure to read Fanfare every week on the WDAV blog. Of note, it's all at WDAV.org. David?
Thanks, Phil. And before we go, and while we're still talking about the Mint Museum, I wanted to share a couple of other bits of news. The Mint has hired Ramona Holloway as its new Community Relations and Civic Engagement Director. She starts this week. She's well known on Charlotte's media scene as a consultant and for the 20 years she spent as co-host of the local radio show, The Matt and Ramona Show. She'll be a member of the museum's leadership team, helping to expand its reach and audience. Also, the Arts and Science Council of Charlotte will host its first Midnight Marathon on Friday, April 11th at the Mint Museum Randolph. It's a performance art fundraiser for the ASC. The fun starts at 4 o'clock and continues through midnight, showing off some of the region's top performers. I talked to the ASC's Erin Wilson.
So you could come for an hour, you could come for the entire day. We're going to have food trucks, we're going to have beverages, we're going to have an amazing plethora of artists, we will have improv artists, dance performers, we'll have spoken word. You will quite literally be able to see 6 to 10 artists in a single hour.
You can find out more at artsandscience.org. And finally, later this month, the Mint Museum Uptown opens a show featuring photographer Annie Leibovitz. She's photographed everyone from world leaders to celebrity entertainers to professional athletes. The Mint calls it a, quote, must-see for fans of photography and celebrity culture. It runs April 27th to August 31st at the Mint Museum Uptown. I'll have more about it in an upcoming Piedmont Arts podcast. For Piedmont Arts, I'm David Borax.